Axio Death Trip, back for a third and final season. Oh, we can stop,
and we will stop.
Do we plan to go out with a bang? Absolutely not, because we don't know how. So, Psychonaut, to kick off season three, I have a very important question for you. Did you like a funeral for a friend when you were growing up? Like, you know, hometown heroes and all? Or was it not something you were really into?
Answer that question or forever hold your peace.
I'm absolutely intimidated to give my answer.
No, that was a very welcoming sort of introduction, I think.
That was your idea of welcoming. Yeah. Right, okay. Before anything else, how were your holidays?
Oh, man, really, really good. I've seen so many bands. It's been wild.
So, like, the Big Rigs roaming tour.
Basically, yeah, I did see Power Man 5000. They came out with, like, lasers on their drumsticks and, like, shone them into the mirror ball. That was pretty good. I did see Head PE.
How was that?
That was pretty good. What I realized is, you know, there's that TV show. Oh, what's the guy's name? He's like the worst NBA player, but he challenges like just normal street ballers and still trounces them. I don't know what it's called. I think it's like he's like White Mamba, whatever it is. But anyway, I realized that even like the worst touring band professionally are still very, very good at what they do. But I did say something to my friend Connor Rhea, as you love to call him, about the show. And this is what he said.
All right. I think I see where you're going with this. It is another classic poorly thought out theory of yours. And I would love to hear it expounded upon in a Batchio episode if it's, you know, appropriate.
Here's what I said, Psychonaut. That Head PE was Incubus for people who fuck. Do you agree with this sentiment?
Yeah, unfortunately I do, because I always got Virgin vibes from listening to Incubus, you know. It's like a God and a Hallelujah away from being a Christian band, Incubus, at times, let's be completely honest. And Brandon Boyd's got Big Youth Pastor vibes. I still love Incubus, do not get me wrong, but I cannot disagree with your theory there, Riggs. I really can't. Head Planet Earth is Incubus for people that want to bang. That's
I just looked at the crowd. I'm like, I reckon we're about 45 minutes away from just a huge all-in orgy. There was a vibe there.
Just a big old shunting going on.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, man. What about you? How was your break?
Yeah, I did jury service, which legally our lawyers have told me I can talk about, but would rather I didn't, not to put off sponsors. And yeah, I got a moved roles. I mean, in all seriousness, Riggs, I don't know if I told you, but I've actually changed roles at my job. So if anybody wants to see what it's like to be writing kind of gossip, columny, pop culture stuff, just Google People World and, you know, you'll find some shit. But yeah, that was my plug. That was my plug, my real life plug.
Man.
Not
Congrats.
A made up fictitious institute or business. Nothing gobshite industries related. That's
I heard like these vicious rumors that people were sort of saying, oh, Batchio Death Trip, they make up a lot of their sponsors, or they make up these gobshite industry shit. And to those people, I would like to say absolutely not. It's all legitimate.
I would say out of 98% of the sponsors we've had on the show, about 42% of those have legitimate business interests. 50% of those have illegitimate business interests. They're real. They just have really bad ideas. And we just seem to be like a magnet for bad business ideas.
Yeah, I have no idea what it is.
What did I think of Fear of Friend? Right, well, there's a bit of a backstory to this. So in post, you can add like a wayward tune behind it. But Funeral for a Friend for me came out at a time when I felt nu metal had jumped the shark, you know. It was just ubiquitous. There was so much of it out there. The big hitters like Limp Bizkit were kind of just doing things that we seemed quite uncool for us in that kind of community. Slipknot were too popular for us in that kind of community. And it's just every nu metal act that came out just seemed a little bit too kind of forced upon. So there were a couple of bands that are referred to as screamo. I mean, I listened to The Used. They were cool. I'm not considering Glassjaw screamo. They're post-hardcore. We'll put a pin on them. Deftones and Wilhaven now. They're not screamo bands before anyone brings that up. But yeah, Funeral for a Friend were part of that rise of Welsh acts that, well, much like Bullet for My Valentine, were doing some, you know, interesting things to come out of there. And Bullet for My Valentine were pretty cool because it was like, for lack of a better term, Riggs, fret wanky. So anyway, Funeral for a Friend, they came out, they dropped this year's Most Open Heartbreak, which was their first EP. They dropped the album, which had Juno on it. At the time, I thought it was interesting. But I fucking hated Funeral for a Friend, man. Oh. And the reason why I brought it up is because it solidifies a path we are evidently going to go down, and that's when we fell out of love with nu metal. For me, if this was the way things were going, I chose the other path, which a lot of other people did. I went down the more indie path. Like, it was around that time I found things like the White Stripes a lot more interesting. The Von Bondies were a lot more interesting to me. Interpol were a lot more interesting to me, you know. And I think it was at that point when I decided I want to take a bit more of a maturer kind of outlook, or a maturer kind of listening. Because I was about to go to university, so in my mind, man, I had this whole, I want to be this suave motherfucker that reads like William S. Burroughs and like listens to The Fall. But yeah, so I mean, that's, I look back at the album now and I think, oh, fucking hell, like what was anyone thinking? I didn't like it. And I think, to be brutally honest, I think that they filled a gap that the Lost Prophets basically had to give up, because their lead singer is a cunt, for lack of a better term, you know? So yeah, I was not a big fan of Funeral for a Friend. But then I also found that that kind of music became very cookie cuttery in a way. What was the difference between Funeral for a Friend or Avenged Sevenfold or who else have we got there? Just a litany of screamo bands. And the only one that ever stuck out for me, dude, was My Chemical Romance. So it just, in my head, I just developed this kind of mantra of, why am I bothering with any of that other stuff when I can just listen to My Chemical Romance? And that was the end for me of my dalliance with nu metal and metal. And that's when we started going into our next series of podcasts due out 2025, Indie Road Trip.
Man, this episode has taken a turn for me, because you suggested this album and I was like, all right, cool. And I've been listening to it and listening to it. And then I'm like, I am not vibing with this at all. This sparks no curiosity in me. That's the thing. Like, the songs are fine. It's all pretty mediocre. I can see why people
like
it.
It's been done before. Now, if you're of that kind of, you want to sit on the fence on this podcast, you don't want to take a side, you don't want to upset anyone, then that's fine. If you like it because it's inoffensive, cool. But don't come to us saying that it was like this brand new. It wasn't even postmodern. It was shit that was being done ages ago in the post-hardcore scene. It's just, it became a bit hot topic-y, if you know what I mean, Riggs. You know, it became more about, we have to wear the tightest jeans possible and then just complain. Like, Daryl Palumbo didn't have to wear tight jeans, dude. Grady Avnall didn't have to wear tight jeans. And they were way better in kind of conveying that emotion that Funeral for a Friend were doing.
Oh, man. Well, I had all these questions ready for you, because I was like, why do you like this? This seems like...
hit me with them.
Well, no, they're all based on the fact that I thought you really liked this band and you connected with them. And I thought, well, maybe it's because they're from your neck of the woods. And my theory was that they are a great band if you are from that area, because they feel like your band. And when they reformed, you know, for those two shows for a charity.
Yeah, which are, like, for honourable causes, if you want to go into it quickly before we dick on them again.
I mean, they just said, you know, a man who can legitimately claim that they're the world's biggest FFAF fam, their friend Stuart, Big Stu brothers, had been diagnosed with a terrible terminal illness, only had a few weeks to live, so they wanted to do something to help, like for their family and the three kids. So they were getting together, doing the shows, selling memorabilia, all that sort of stuff, which all of the funds go into the family, which is incredible. And I saw video footage of that show, and the people in the crowd are losing their minds.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very devout following, Funeral for a Friend. A very devout following, and I think you're right. It picks up for that kind of like they're our local band, and there was a couple of bands that used to tour the UK. Sponge, for example, were like a big ska punk band that just seemed like, you know, the proper punks that were like into Less Than Jake and stuff like that. That was our band, and so for, you know, the kind of metal fans that were moving on to something different. Funeral for a Friend, that was their band, you know. That was, you know, this is a British band that rule. Kind of like how, again, bringing up Bullet for My Valentine, that was kind of Britain's answer to Trivium, you know. So the people that liked Funeral for a Friend in the UK really liked them, you know, kind of cried when they broke up the first time round. You know, you could not say a bad thing wrong about them, you know, otherwise you'd be inflicted with, yeah, but listen to Juno. Juno's heartbreaking. I don't know about you, Riggs, but I listen to Juno now and think, it's really good opening. It's just not going anywhere by midway through the song, apart from maybe, oh, we'll speed up the tempo. And that's just lazy songwriting, dude.
Man, I hate the intro to Juno. This one.
I love the intro because it's... Yeah.
What? That guitar tone is dog shit.
How can you say that, man? I would ask you to marry that guitar tone up with the opening of Major by Glassjaw.
Oh, no. Hoist the bum over time.
Oh, yeah,
oh, no.
Because like it or not, this sect of bands like Funeral for a Friend, Kids in Glass Houses... They all caught Glassjaw. They must have done during Glassjaw's tour of when they supported Soulfly. They must have caught Glassjaw because every single band of that ilk owes a debt to Glassjaw, including the American bands like Finch. So yeah, you listen to the and maybe that's why I love the opening of Juno, because it reminds me of the opening of Major.
I just reckon it was too like twangy. I can hear the guitar pick hitting the string. Oh, no, it just sounded shit. It reminds me of like a local Bendigo band who they were sort of doing this sort of stuff. And for some reason, I think they'd seen that you mic up an acoustic guitar by putting the mic in front of the turd hole, whatever it's called. And then they did that, but with an electric. So they mic'd up the amp and the frets, or like, you know, the pickup, sorry. So their whole EP, they had just like sort of scratching, twangy strings from a raw dogged electric guitar. So it reminded me of that, I think. But I need to go back and listen to Glassjaw now and be like, oh, yeah, it's a very similar tone.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, Riggs. Best song on the album is Bullet Theory, correct?
Absolutely, because of this guitar.
That's that Will Haven influence there, eh? And the music video for that was incredible as well, if you got a chance to see
it. That's the odd thing, man. This band brought out none of my usual curiosity. Like, I'm a very annoyingly curious person. I want to learn so much and see so much and dig deep. There was no spark there. It sparked no joy.
I'm hoping it didn't spark joy after you listened to it, rather than, oh, for God's sakes, now what's Psychonaut got me listening to, for God's sakes?
There was a little bit of like, look, I just realized like they're a decent band. I can see why people love them. And I just thought, Hometown Heroes, Psychonaut, would have seen them when you were like 16 or whatever, and you're like, hey, they're really good. And I think it's when you go and see bands that, like, you know, in their hometown, you're like, oh, these guys are really important to the scene because, oh, that guy runs this blog, or this girl is a booker for this, or they run this venue, or they're really active at archiving videos and whatever, and you're like, oh, they're really important for the scene, and they had this band and it just blew up. Now, Funeral for a Friend blew up really quickly, like quicker than they ever imagined.
Massively.
That was my theory, and I just could not be bothered digging into that any deeper, because my current theory on this band is, if you got all of the multiverses that exist, all of the infinite possibilities where we're doing this podcast and I'm sitting a bit more to the left, or we're doing this podcast.
Oh, yeah. The Batchioverse. We've got a name for it.
No matter what happens in any multiverse, this album is made. This album is always coming out because it's generic and relatively easy.
It's basically music's equivalent to Uluru. It's there. Australia could be called.
I don't know. I feel like that's treading into some dangerous territory.
I don't know. No, Australia could be any other names, but Uluru's still going to be there. And like, we could be in any other part of the Batchioverse, you know. It could be like Batchio Earth 404 or something like that, where me and you are basically like sentient hot dogs just blabbering on. And this album will still be made.
Well, I've got another theory because...
Is it a bullet theory?
It is not a bullet theory, but do you remember that show Schitt's Creek that everyone like lost their mind over?
Yeah, with Eugene Levy, is that correct?
And everyone was like, yes, yeah. Rosebud Motel, so funny. They were sharing all the GIFs on WhatsApp, you know. And I'm like, this is a good show and it's really important to a lot of people. It put forth a lot of interesting things. There was a great documentary about it and you could see how many people really connected with it. But I was like, there is no longevity in this. It is of the moment. And I think it's important for its time and it's an important transitional sort of piece, I think. But there's not enough hooks. There's not enough little catch cries or really, truly interesting story moments that you get from your Friends or Seinfeld or It's Always Sunny. All those things have a bit more longevity that people return to. The Office is a great one, you know? And I'm just like, I reckon Funeral for a Friend was kind of like Schitt's Creek. Really important for people at the time, but there's not much to go back into. There's nothing that sort of stands the test of time.
Yeah, I think the only time you'd go back into it is if you were having like a really, really nostalgic kind of moment, like, oh, you know, let just want to dig back into it. Or you're doing research into a soon-to-be Grammy-winning podcast, which is what we did. But I can completely agree with it. We've said this before with a couple of albums, and we're going to bring it up again. It was definitely an album for the time, wasn't it?
Yeah. And people might be like, hey, why do you say these things about this album being bland or whatever? And I allow me to go through just the first track, Psychonaut, and I wonder if you can hear this with me. Rookie, the opening track, yeah?
Yeah.
That fucking song is so dog shit because the drummer is holding the song hostage. Because you can tell they're just like sitting back on the beat and they've got different tempos all the time. Like a lot of these Funeral for a Friend songs, they have half tempo for the first half of the verse and then like they go to 2-4 timing for the second half of the verse. Now this drummer in Rookie, oh, have a listen to this. Okay, you ready? Which is fine. Okay, if that's a choice you've made, I hate those little like offbeat ride bell hits because it takes you out of the song. They're too clean. But then you're like, well, cool. A chorus is a place that we return to. Like, you know the song is going there. It's familiar. Great. So what do they do on the second chorus? You ready? Do you hear that? Like, it's really obvious to me, but do you hear it?
They've changed the drum beat up, have they not?
But they've changed where, like, it sort of lands. Yeah, so they've gone to this, like, floaty backbeat almost, but at double time, but it's not good. It takes you out of the song entirely. And to make matters worse, okay, they end the song with a splash cymbal. Oh, my God. This album actually has quite a lot of splash cymbals, and I really would hope that someone would go through the album and just grab all of the splash hits from every song, because it'll be fucking amazing.
Only an idiot would fucking do that.
Well, Psychonaut.
Well, I'm that fucking idiot,
Yeah, I'm that fucking idiot, cause that's what I've gone and done. Yeah, I grabbed those splash cymbals, the splash cymbals. Yeah, I grabbed those splash cymbals. Yeah, I'm a fucking idiot. I have gone through every song and grabbed at least one splash cymbal hit.
Of course you have. Of course you have. Why would you not?
I was listening for faff late one night when my ears did hear a piece of shite. For the drummer he did hit that small cymbal that really adds nothing to a song at all.
He hit the splash.
He hit the little splash.
He hit the splash.
That tiny little splash.
He hit the splash.
The sound was gone in a flash.
He hit the splash.
I don't know why he hit the splash. Nah, but really, everyone listen, tell me one part of that, those grabs that you heard, where you're like, yes, that splash really made the song better. The only example I can think of is like Incubus's Wish You Were Here, that's it. Anyway, back to you in the studio. I said back to you in the studio. Yep, thanks. Back to you in the studio.
Wait, were we not in the studio? I think I've just had an out-of-body experience.
It's a multiverse.
Ah, the Batchoverse strikes again. Enjoy it while you still got it, listeners. Enjoy it.
Oh, man. Like, I was just like, stop hitting the fucking splash. If this band had another drummer, they would have been better. If they had the drummer from My Chemical Romance, who I'm seeing in a couple of weeks, if they had that drummer, it would be a better band. If they had the Thursdays drummer, if they had the Poison the Well drummer, anyone, Shannon Larkin, come on in. They would have been a much, much, much better band.
So for you, the problem with Funeral for a Friend is they've just got a bad drummer. Is that correct?
I mean, that's the main thing that I hear. I also hear a vocalist who can sing but is sort of stuck in a certain range. Like some of those choruses you need to really elevate, and I think their vocal range weren't able to hit them those heights well enough.
I mean, sometimes it works because sometimes there's that kind of guttural strain that you can hear, you know, behind the vocal cords. But then when you really need to hit that high note without any kind of flaw, I don't think, don't be writing music unless you get a vocal coach, which it turns out, you know, in subsequent albums the singing did manage to hit those levels. But do you think a lot of it was put on though, because the strained kind of vocal takes seem to be like a hallmark of screamo? Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I feel like maybe that's the issue with the band. I feel like they were just sort of following a template, or there wasn't much revolutionary about the band, which is fine. Not every band has to really push the envelope or, you know, shatter boundaries or, you know, smash the glass ceiling or whatever it needs to be. But for the amount of reverence this band gets and how many people absolutely love it, I don't quite, that doesn't marry in my mind, you know, for a relatively mediocre band to have this legion of fans.
Yeah, maybe it is small town syndrome, but just on a bigger scale. And it's a shame because there was so many other bands that got lumped into that kind of Kerrang, you know, MTV2, that kind of group that really kind of suffered because I think people assumed that they were part of that kind of group of screamo bands. Like one in particular was a group called Reuben, who were fantastic, and then they broke up, but everybody you spoke to would tell you that they loved Reuben. And the lead singer of Reuben once did an interview saying, well, okay, well, where were all those people when we needed album sales? So yeah, I think there's a little bit of a bitterness just how much space Funeral for a Friend occupied. And what was already a very bloated metal scene at the time, and And then it's like, oh, great, it's another offshoot. And that we're trying to, like, you know, wedge it in amongst kind of like all the regular stuff because this is the direction the brand is taking. It just, yeah, it felt like a branding exercise, if I think about it. It just felt like, let's take the music, but rather than it being about the music, let's just take the kind of the style. You know, let's take the fashion and the kind of tropes and what makes it kind of cool, but let's put minimal effort into songwriting and just rip off Glassjaw.
Yeah. We've spoken about this on the podcast before, but when I was in high school, it was a really rough time. Every time I was like, hey guys, Zoolander isn't the best movie in the world. And they were like, get the fuck out. If you're if you're walking around Dirty Donnie, are you at that time, are you proudly saying Funeral for a Friend aren't my cup of tea, or would you be sort of a bit more diplomatic about it for fear of, you know, just being berated?
I think because I think around that time I would have either been in my second year of college or I would have finished college. So it was definitely some kind of downtime between further education, but I think I was one of those guys that thought it was cool, if you're going to be critical about music, to just absolutely slate it. And I think I was anything but diplomatic. You know, I think I said, oh yeah, they got one song, it's pretty cool, but you know, the rest of it's pretty shit, eh? And not give an explanation, just a bit of resentment, just that once again they're being foisted upon me. Kind of like during my indie years, how I felt Block Party, Silent Alarm was just being forced on me. So I just grew this resentment even though I hadn't paid too much attention to it.
That's a really good point, because that's not Funeral for a Friend's fault. Like, they just made a song. It's up to the industry and the system that sort of pushed it everywhere. And like, and radio were probably like, yes, we'll play this band. And MTV or Kerrang were like, yes, we'll play this band ad nauseum. It's like, and you're sort of angry at the system or the distribution, but that's not the band's fault, but the band bears the brunt.
Yeah. That is true. And the band should unfortunately, the band shouldn't bear the brunt of it full stop. You know, they're just doing what they think is right. They're just doing what they enjoy doing. And it's the kind of the machine behind it that's making us resentful. But Riggs, I put it to you this way. They're not the only band that have had a massive machine behind them, you know? And yet, we've spoken about many bands during the duration of, you know, our podcast, which have had the machine behind them. And perhaps it's not a big machine, but, you know, Roadrunner Records, man. We've talked about Roadrunner Records and Slipknot en masse. And we'd be lying to ourselves if we didn't say that Slipknot had the machine behind them. But we accepted it because Slipknot were a good band. I just think that part of it with Funeral for a Friend, though it's not their fault, is the fact that the music is pretty formulaic. And I don't even think that at times, you know, record labels that had huge, you know, huge amounts of money thought, you know, too much about the songwriting. It was about the image. Time is a flat circle at the end of the day. And what we're talking about is the same shit that happens when Instagram or TikTok, you know, creators, you know, get signed to big deals like Bad Baby. So, you know, I'm complaining about something that will forever happen across the many, many multiverses, including the Batchiverse.
And I think now you can operate more in a silo in terms of your listening. You don't have to listen to a radio. You've got Bluetooth headphones and you've got your own Spotify playlist and you can listen to whatever. So, and you know, you've got YouTube subscriptions. So you can just sort of ignore it. Whereas I think when we were growing up, it was like, no, these are the main things. The main ways to access music is that you got your record store, you got your radio, you got TV. Like that's basically it. And the internet was sort of coming alive. But I would like to go back. Slipknot are a great band and that with a machine behind them. But we might have had the same feeling if they didn't do anything after that first album, if they just regurgitated that. It's those bands who take that machine and that opportunity and go like, yes, we're going to do something now. We're going to up the level on this next album, or we're going to take a bit of a different turn, or we're going to use this opportunity that we've been given. Whereas I think bands like Funeral for a Friend were just like, we're going to keep doing the same stuff. You know, it's like, oh, Okay, cool. Fair enough. You know, even Nickelback, they had a machine behind them. They did have some, you know, very similar tracks. No, that's a terrible example. I'm out. See you tomorrow.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I will be taking over the podcast from here on in. Oh, no, you're back. Are you back?
I think the worst point is they were one of those bands that sort of introduced that blah screaming. You know, I think it's Blurg or whatever it is. They're just like, and I think it's a drummer on this album. It's backing vocals, but then it's just like, blah, but they can't actually scream. You know what I mean? There's no sustain to it. There's no emotion behind it. It's just like all from the throat and it sounds dog shit.
Right. Yeah. But I don't know anyone I could talk to that knows how to scream.
Yeah. I can give Dr. Drums a call and see if he knows anyone.
No, but he's drums, Riggs. He's drums. Yeah, but like he's might not scream.
I mean, he knows people, you know? Like he knows Dr.
Avril. Oh, hold on. I got it. Have you still got Burton C. Bell's number?
No, I'll just give Dr. Drums a call, man. Give me a sec.
Oh, fuck.
I'm calling Dr. Drums. But I don't have his mobile number, but I do have his landline. And I hope that he is home so I can ask him if he knows anyone who knows anything about screaming. I hope that he does. Well, please answer the phone.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Is that Libby Parsons, Ashley Judd's character from Double Jeopardy?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, hi, it's Big Riggs from the soon-to-be award-winning podcast Butcher Death Trip. I'd love to speak to Dr. Drums if he's there.
No worries, I'll just go get him for you.
Oh, cool, thank you.
Who is it? Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, how you doing? Yeah, good, mate. I hope you're all good. Hey, just a quick question. We're doing an episode on Funeral for a Friend, and they've got this like singer in the background who does like that blah scream. Oh, that splat screaming. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Do you know like much about it? Because, yeah, I'd love to get some sort of professional take on it, you know?
I don't really. It's all right. I don't know anyone who would. But let me ask Mr. Muse. He's here at the moment.
Mr. Muse, what's he doing there?
Yeah. So a few things have changed since we last spoke. So, yeah, Mr. Muse and myself and Libby Parsons have sort of joined a thruple. So we're giving that a go and see how it goes. But, yeah, let me just grab him and maybe he'll be able to put you in contact with someone. I don't know.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
Hey, Mr. Muse. Yeah? What? Chris from the soon-to-be award-winning podcast, Let's Get You. Got a question for you. About Muse? Yeah. Oh, I don't know if it's about Muse. Just come. All right.
Hello, Mr. Muse speaking. Oh, hey, Mr. Muse. Not sure if you remember me, Big Riggs from the soon-to-be award-winning podcast Butcher Death Trip. We had you on for the Muse episode.
Yep, Muse, that's right.
Great band.
Look,
hey,
man, we're doing an episode on Funeral for a Friend, and they have that singer's like, rah.
Oh, it's like, rah.
Yeah,
God,
it's like
this is fucking one of your best.
Yeah, do you know anyone that would
one
be
of your fucking best.
Able to come on the podcast to talk about it, like an expert in their field or something?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah. I haven't spoken to him for a while, but Dr. Screams, he'd be good on this on this topic, I think.
Mm.
I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, but I've got him on Facebook. So, hey, Dr. Drums, hang up the phone. No, don't listen in. It's embarrassing.
I just can hear.
I can hear you breathing. Hang it up.
Fine.
Thank you.
God, can't have some privacy anymore.
I'll put you in touch with Dr. Screams, and like if he can't help you, I no one.
No, thanks.
Have you checked out the new Muse track?
No, I haven't.
Oh, no, that's fair. Not many people have. But
not really.
It's a banger. Oh, is it? They'll be playing in like stadiums near you soon anyway. If you ever go on a Muse show, let me know. I'll catch you there.
Yeah, I don't think I will. But
all right, man, I'll pass you Dr. Scream's contacts.
Cool.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, yeah. Thanks, man.
No worries, mate. Bye. Thank you for your help.
Oh, God.
Dr. Screams.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm Dr. Screams.
I'm interested in
screams.
Oh, God.
I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real
screamer.
I am an actual
screamer.
I live right
a screamer. I like to do some screams. Hello, hello, it's Dr. Screams here, no relation to Dr. Drums, but a dear friend of Mr. Muse. I'm here today to talk to you about a very specific type of screaming vocal. Now, the history of screaming itself is a long and complicated one, and the roots of the technique go a long way back. We've heard the painful screams of Kurt Cobain. And bands like Pantera did screaming 30 years ago. You can even go back to 1966 to The Who's Boris the Spider that many will claim to be the first instance of the death metal scream. Boris the Spider. But dear listener, you and I, we're going to skip ahead and come to a time where screamed vocals moved from primarily being a feature of heavy music genres and eventually broke into the mainstream. For emo kids like me, the groundwork was laid in the 90s by Refused. For your more new metal kids, it was likely Slipknot around the same time. And though these are not stylistically similar, they are important to what came next. By 2002, Linkin Park were beginning their ascension to being a household name, and Chester Bennington's ability to switch between beautiful clean vocals and emotive screams broke down barriers between underground and mainstream audiences. Here was somebody screaming on the radio and on music television alongside Britney Spears, Ashanti, and Nelly. But was all this for the best? Eventually came a wave of some of the most sickening end-of-life quote-unquote screams in almost every vaguely hardcore punk or metal band. All of a sudden, every show you went to had the already low-functioning bass player sounding like he was vomiting into a microphone. It was also a great way for hot dudes that couldn't play an instrument to front a band, but I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter at all. I'm not still losing sleep over it. Anyway, I digress. This scream can only be described as the splat scream, a hallmark of the mall screamo your boy Dr. Screams loved so much as a faux angsty teen. Sometimes it was done well. Sometimes it was a representation of the singer's emotions. And other times it just existed to emphasize some already cringeworthy lyrics. And while I love the good cop, bad cop dynamic of this genre that remains close to my heart, no song encapsulates the superfluousness of the splat scream better than Under Oath's When the Sun Sleeps. Now, I love Under Oath, I love Dallas Taylor, and this song is a guilty pleasure of mine. But you decide if the screaming makes this one better. Screams have long been perfected by countless successful modern-day acts, but it took some absolute shockers to get there. And on behalf of all aging emos, I sincerely apologize for Broken Side. I walked into the club looking at- 20 years on from the advent of the splat scream, many heavy bands are making an impact on the mainstream. Bands like Bring Me the Horizon, Architects, Bad Omens, and Spirit Box have ensured that screaming will endure. So while the splat scream is pretty disgusting and can definitely be left behind, we can be sure that screaming is in a great place. And to quote Dolly Parton, if you want the rainbow, you gotta put up with the rain. They call me Dr. Screams. Good morning, how are you? I'm Dr. Screams. I'm interested in screams. I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real screamer. I am an actual screamer. I live like a screamer. I like to do some screams.
If we were going to earn a Grammy for anything, for any episode, this would be the one that I would submit for consideration. Because I think that the last probably 8 minutes was the most mature conversation this fucking podcast has ever had.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm just happy that Mr. Muse found some bodies. I think that's really great, and they seem really happy together. So it's cool. I mean, I can't imagine the amount of Muse that Dr. Drums is currently being subjected to and what that does to someone's mind, but pretty impressive.
I guess, you know, we'll find out at a later date. Have we got a game to start off the final season with?
Not only do we have the game, I promise you it is the most annoying game we've had in 96 episodes. Like, it is so fucking annoying. And I take great pride in subjecting you and all the listeners to it. So, obviously, funeral for a friend. Friend being the key word there, yeah?
Yeah.
I thought, well, when I think friend, now I don't know about you, Psychonaut, but when I think friend, I think Toy Story, I think Randy Newman.
Okay.
You've Got a Friend in Me. Originally titled, You've Got a Funeral in Me, but when they heard funeral for a friend, they changed it, okay, in one of the multiverses.
Okay, yeah.
Randy Newman actually recorded a lot of splat screams in the back of You've Got a Friend in Me, but I've actually got the original here. You got a friend in me. When the road's too rough for me, and you're miles and miles from your life for me, you just remember what your old mouth said for you. Got a friend in me. So that's the original. Obviously, Pixar were like, no way. You got to get some piano in. And so anyway, I've taken what was released to the public, and I've sung other lyrics over the top. And so you have to tell me, what song am I singing? Okay, I've got six of them.
Oh, God.
And they're annoying.
All right.
So
I have to guess the song that you are singing lyrically.
Correct.
All right, okay, I just needed to make sure.
Here we go. Lately I'm beginning to find that I should be the one behind the wheel. Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there with
I've got it. It's Strife by Incubus.
Yeah!
Well done.
Again, it's the youth pastor vibes next song.
Yeah. Virginity reclaimed.
Gobshite Industries.
Here we go.
Life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone. I hear you call my name and it feels like home. When you call my name,
okay, this is like oh no, this is like a prayer by Madonna, right? Yeah, I had to write a lot about Madonna. I love Madge. I think she's great.
Madonna is back in the news for all the right reasons, being creative and writing timeless songs. Here we go.
I'm so happy 'cause
Nirvana Lithium.
Today I found my friends.
Fucking hell.
They're in my head. I'm so ugly.
The intro is okay, currently longer than the song at the moment. All right.
I surprised myself with that one.
There's no way you'll get this next song that quick, I promise.
Okay.
all the times that I, well, I felt insecure for you. And I leave my burdens at the door, but I'm on the outside, I'm looking in. I can see through you, see your true colors, cause inside you're ugly. You're ugly like me. And I'm feeling those gliders.
Is it Outside by Stained?
Yeah!
Oh.
You just made it in then. Just snuck in.
Yeah, I was second guessing myself.
Nah, man, never doubt yourself when it comes to Stained. Aaron Lewis, you can constantly doubt yourself. Actually, we do encourage when you hear an Aaron Lewis quote or him talking, whatever, just reflect and ruminate on what he's actually said, okay? And maybe some fact checking. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just because he's got a trucker's cap on, it doesn't mean it's right.
I want you to know that I am happy for you. I wish
you ought to know Alanis Morissette.
Holy shit!
Yeah. Yeah. Of me. Is she perverted like me? Would she go down on you in a theater? How the fuck are you doing this?
I don't know. It's been a while. I'm quite good at games, apparently. Well, apparently, I have a real good knock. I tell you why, because when I was learning to play guitar, I never learned a whole song. I learned like the key elements and thought, fuck it, that'll do. Next song.
Man, this legitimately happens. After every game, I will get messages from people being like, why is Psychonaut so good at the games? Like, it's fucked. It's insane. Connor Rhea is always like, that encyclopedic knowledge of just fucking dog shit music is next level. But will you go 100% in the You've Got a Funeral for a Friend game? Let's see. I reckon you'll be stumped. Someone full of fun. Do me till I'm well done. Well, little Bo Peep, coming from a stun gun, beware, take care, most motherfuckers have a cold ass there. Oh baby, please be there, suck my kiss, cut me in my shit, hit me, you can't hurt me.
Oh my god, is it Red Hot Chili Peppers, Suck My Kiss, I'm guessing?
Yeah, yeah!
You had no idea till I said Suck My Kiss.
Don't feel like I earned that point, to be honest with you, man. So I'm happy to take the L on that one.
It just goes to show, like, people think good songs are often structure and melody, and some people say they're lyrics. But you can take Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics and put them in any song, and suddenly the song is also dog shit. That is the effect of Anthony Kiedis. Like, it's actually a really impressive skill.
He's like a virus, dude.
Allegedly.
Shit. Okay, hold on. He's allegedly like a virus. I think I've covered us there. So, look, I'm sorry, first and foremost, that I completely derailed this episode by not defending Funeral for a Friend. I thought, I kind of get the impression that you were expecting a little bit of conflict to appear during this episode, and unfortunately, that's not been the case.
What I thought it was sentimentality, and I wasn't really going to butt heads with that because that comes from a different place. That comes from a place of love. Now, if you had said these songs are amazing structurally, sonically, then I would have come at you hard. But I wasn't going to fuck with you. Like, when I was 16, this was really important to me because, like, I get that.
Yeah, and I think that's where we have to reconcile why a lot of people love that band, because the sentimentality of growing up with that being, you know, the predominant kind of alternative to, you know, what else was out there in terms of like popular culture, that was for them what I would imagine Slipknot was for you, or what Soulfly was for me. So
what Finger 11 is for me currently.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's 311. Well, we're all about the 11s this month, aren't we? So, yeah, I can understand from a sentimental standpoint. And And, you know, they seem like good people.
They seem like great people. Really fun, friendly, nice dudes, yes.
Yeah, and the grand scheme of, like, it's harmless, and why should we get Ben out of shape for it being harmless? So from that whole kind of sentimentality thing, yeah, by all means, have at you. Funeral for a Friend, I would imagine, are a fantastic band for you, but they're not for me. And that's the kind of approach I would take now, as opposed to at the time just like being completely fucking nasty about it, being a real dick about it. But if you come to me and try and argue with, you know, but listen to the key changes, what about the melodies, the dynamics, then you're right, I would quite happily tell you to, like, fuck off, they are shit. And I think that's the duality of man that we're talking about at the end of the day, Riggs. I think that the duality of man is, can I just bear it because someone else enjoys it, or should I call it out because someone else is just being narcissistic about it? The deep questions on Batchio Death Trip.
This is the most mature episode, and when I look at the Batman character Two-Face, I actually think about bands like Funeral for a Friend and say, yes, you can have two sides to your personality, you know? And Funeral for a Friend really brings that to the forefront, and we really appreciate everyone sticking around to the end to listen to this. I mean, we sort of think people come to this podcast because it's an interesting, insightful, witty, soon-to-be Grammy Award-winning podcast. But actually, Psychonaut, I think we both know, like deep in our hearts of hearts, why people come to this podcast, and it's for our sponsors. Like, people want to know who we've sunk $35K into.
Oh, my God. That's gone up because of inflation, hasn't it?
Yeah, man, absolutely. You've got to spend money to make money. And I think I've spent this week's marketing budget wisely. Again, can we just get one fucking repeat customer? I would love that. You know, it's tiring every week trying to find a new sponsor. But
yeah, but they all are repeat customers, dude. I mean, let's be honest. Everybody knows Gobshite Industry run a whole bunch of shell operations.
No, don't. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. I think I've put 35 grand into a great band. And they're a band that I think you love, Psychonaut. Fuel? Do you remember Fuel? Shimmer?
Yeah, I remember Fuel. So stick around if you want to hear what Riggs has pissed £35,000 or dollars. Delete as appropriate what region you're listening to this in. And yeah, we'll catch you for the next episode.
Whoop, whoop. Oh, by the way, before I do play the sponsor.
Fake out ending.
We need to thank the Juggalos. Our Insane Clown Posse episode has gone gangbusters.
Shit. No, right. Okay, just before we end, I would like to know what the feedback, because, you know, to be honest with people listening in, me and you had a lot of trepidation going into that episode about Insane Clown Posse, because we both didn't want to come across and accidentally sound either pandering or accidentally offend them, because, you know, we were talking about just how nice the whole Juggalo community is. So what was the feedback in the end? Did we get any death threats?
Nah. All incredibly positive, and they've obviously shared it throughout their community, because we did that episode, then we went on break, so it wasn't much promo. It was Christmas, New Year's, all of that stuff, a lot of other holidays, and then it's already like top five all-time episodes. Like, it's doing really, really, really well. So obviously it's getting shared around there, and I think there were some comments on Reddit that people really, really enjoyed it. Someone said it was unbiased. We've also got a really like interesting and nice email from a listener, Matt, who was talking about enjoying the podcast as well, which is really sweet. We got a comment like about the OTEP episode, was like, this was fucking great.
That OTEP episode was great because of Ez, though, let's be fair.
Yeah, and thank you, Ez, for getting me into head PE as well. But yeah, Ez brings the gold. Same with the Guano Apes episode. That one's really, really
good. Yeah, she brings the gold and the ruckus. She keeps us in line.
I always think in my mind, hey, the podcast, that episode's done, on to the next one. But then you always forget, people find it maybe a year later or 2 years later, and they're like, I love that OTEP episode. And you're like, I have no memories of it. Cool. I'm glad you liked it, you know?
I'm the same way, like, I know that they finished doing that Sopranos podcast, but I'm only now venturing back to the pandemic era when it first started. So yeah, there's a lot of love, and I hope even when we finish doing the podcast that people will still come back to it. But especially to the juggalos out there, just a big woo woo, it's appreciated.
And a big shout out to all our fuel heads. What's up, fuck faces? It's 2023 now. Isn't it time we collectively took a breath and went back and revisited the work of Brett, Carl, Jeff and Jonathan, the boys over at Fuel? Remember their incredible album Sunburn that had hit songs such as this?
Don't break it, the band. Here and now, will we ever be again? 'Cause I have found all that shimmers in this world is sure to fade.
Well, Gobshot Records are pleased to announce that on Valentine's Day, they'll be releasing Fuel's greatest hits, featuring hit fucking bangers like this.
My hands again. Leave love bleeding in my hands. Love lies bleeding.
And everybody's favorite Fuel track.
Voice is strained and she says, baby, it's 3 a.m. I must be lonely. Hey, yeah. And she says, well, baby,
when you think of Fuel, I bet you think of this song.
And I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't think that they understand when everything's made to be broken.
Sorry, what's that? I didn't catch that. You don't think Fuel sang all these songs? Well, who the fuck else did? 'Cause it sounds exactly like Fuel to me. Listen to this.
Here without you, baby.
That's but Fuel.
Just do all my lonely mind. I think about you, baby. And I dream about you all the time. I'm here without you, baby.
Yes, like, Google it. All of these songs are Fuel, and you can get it on their greatest hits compilation.
If you could only see
classic
the
Fuel.
Way she loves me.
Fuck yeah.
Maybe you'd understand.
Singing my Fuel boys.
Why I feel this way.
Imagine kissing your partner this Valentine's Day with this song by Fuel playing in the background.
You know that someday I will, someday, somehow, I'm gonna make it alright, but not right now. I know you're wondering where. I know that someday, somehow.
Do Valentine's Day right with Fuel's greatest
the
hits.
The feeling, an earthy feeling, and I believe in the faith that grows. And the four right chords will make me cry.
All right, cool, yeah.
When I'm with you, I feel
we get the idea
like
now, yeah? We got the joke. Fuel sound like so many other bands at that time. Right. Pretty indistinguishable. Decent
in,
songs,
said
though.
She was crashing the valve, but it ripped through the CD. We tripped on the urge to feel
this
alive.
Slaps.
Now I'm struggling to survive those days you were wearing that
fuck velvet
dress. You're a priestess. I
must
confess those little red panties. They pass the test light up around the belly, face down on the mattress. One.
Everybody.
And you hold me.
Can't hear you, Connery.
And we're broken. Still, it's all that I want to do. Just a little now. Feel myself hovering off the ground. I'm scared. I'm not coming down. No, no. No, no.
Fucking what a banger.
And I won't run for my love.
Ah.
She's got it in her.
Fuel are my favorite
like
band now.
Smile, but nothing is all right.
All right, all Josh. Right. Ez. #35K. Let's hear it.
Something else. Get me through this life.
Candyman, what you got?
I want something else.
Psychonaut, here we go. I'm not listening when you say
goodbye. Goodbye.
Oh, Fuel! Fucking great band. Gobshite Records.